Welcome to the Round 4 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and this week I'm joined again by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. Just the two of us tonight.
Mm-hmm. And a shorter show as well after, you know, a bonus length edition last week. We had a lot to cover last week.
Yeah, it did go for quite a while, didn't it? Mm. Hopefully some of the advice worked out for people.
Mm-hmm. We got some pretty decent feedback, so we think it went pretty well. But of course, you know, whether or not you have positive or negative feedback, please feed that back to us so we know how we can improve for future shows. And as always, thank you for your questions on social media. We take questions each week on a Tuesday at Supercoach Coach on Twitter and at facebook.com/Supercoach Coach. This week, a majority of the questions are around Brad Crouch, those of you that have him. I'm in that boat, unfortunately, considering trading this week with news that he will be out for 2 to 3 weeks. So I'm not sure whether or not that includes the 1 week he's already missed, but he's out for a little while.
My understanding is it's another 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay, that's not good news. The other topics that we're looking at, whether or not it's too late to pick up must-haves like Marcus Adams or Jacob Wiedering or Aaron Hall, and looking at Hartley v. Ruggles. If you're thinking about picking up a backline rookie, for example, for somebody like Oscar McDonald. So we've got a whole bunch of other questions and we're looking forward to getting straight into the show. Before we do, just a reminder, for those of you who have a couple of dollars to spare and appreciate the show, we're an independent podcast, so you can support us at patreon.com/supercoachcoach, or the link will be in the podcast page each week. Just a friendly reminder for those of you out there that are thinking about it but haven't yet pulled the trigger, we very much appreciate it.
Yes, we do appreciate support, Matt.
An update from the Supercoach Coach group, Mark. So 3 rounds in, there's been enough games played to give shout-outs to the community members. So after 3 rounds, Here I Go Again is leading the Supercoach Coach group. After a score of 24-78 this week, he's ranked at 29th in the competition. I'm bloody jealous of that ranking.
Decent start.
And the top score in our group for this week was Sticks, who scored 24-91, so an absolutely massive score. Congratulations to our Supercoach Coach community members that are scoring well. Our leagues have gotten off to a reasonable start. It tends to take a little while for some of the more casual leagues to drop off. Especially these days, Mark, most of us, including ourselves, start with a fairly cookie-cutter team. Before we forget, Mark, let's update our community on how we scored over the weekend. You can kick us off since you won, mate.
I scored 23.66 this week, mate. Took me back up the rankings a little bit to 15,000. It's really hard to get much of a read on rankings this early year, I think, because there's a lot of randomness to premium scores at this stage. So I think we'll learn a bit more over the next sort of 2 months, I guess. Pretty good week, really, I guess. Daniel Rich out and I had Brown coming on the field was the only real sad moment. Had Ablett as captain. Goldstein obviously kicked butt. Aaron Hall. A lot of my sort of common picks did well. Shaw came back into form. Had Wiedering. Day did well. It was good to see Bartel score. And even though he probably didn't destroy the game, it was good to see Barlow rack up 99. And I stuck with DeGoey in the end and he posted 89 and looked pretty good at different times during that game. Now, I know I beat you the first 2 weeks. Surely I didn't win 3 weeks in a row.
You have, mate. I've got 247,000 sitting in bank at the moment, and I know you have close to none. So your team would be better placed than mine at the moment to score some points. Hopefully I can trade that.
Also, you had that money sitting in the bank the first 2 weeks as well?
No. I made a trade last week. I brought in Hall and I brought in Papley, and it's left me with a little bit of money. And that means, in terms of resource allocation, it's probably not been as efficient to a start of the season as for you. But you know, I've learned from the last few years that trying to trade aggressively for that really short term gain is perhaps a little bit short sighted. So I'm going to hold my nerve and hopefully sooner rather than later I can pump that money into my team and bring my scoring back up a little bit. I mean, it was made worse by the fact that I have Rich like you did, and I have Crouch as well, so that put Menadue's score of 31 on field for me.
Ooh,
yeah, and where I have Green, you have, you know, a Martin type, because like I said, you got more money on field.
You might get me next week, mate, when you put that money on the field.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed, buddy. At the moment, there's a few sketchy players in my team, and I'm really regretting that last-minute decision to go mid-pricer. I mean, if I had Fife and Parrish or Oliver instead of Crouch Wines at the moment, I'd be a lot happier. But that just goes to show you the mid prices, whole bunch of risk, and taking players who have had injury affected preseasons is even more of a red flag. So Krejci was definitely fallen into that category, unfortunately for myself. That ties us very nicely into this week's first question and major topic of the week. We are 1 week out of price changes, and so we tend to not recommend trading during this period of the year, Mark. Even next week and the week after, it tends to be pretty hard to recommend trades because you kind of want to be extracting more value from your rookies than you'd get after only 1 week. But in the case of having a player like Crouch who's injured or who's not living up to expectations, these are the sort of players you'd actually consider spending a trade on this week. So anyway, we'll start off with Troy Rodney's question. He's asking about the best downgrade or upgrade target for Crouch. And I just want to ask you whether or not you would even consider downgrading with Brad Crouch, considering that you might not be upgrading for a few weeks. So you'd be potentially leaving, you know, $200K in bank for a couple of weeks.
So if I've got $200,000 to $250,000 I'm upgrading. If I have only $100,000 sitting in the bank, I'm probably downgrading just because there's no real options that you want to be changing to. You may as well be making money. You're not going to be bringing a keeper into your team for $400,000 in the midfield. So my advice would be probably downgrade situation. There might be a defender or a forward that sort of appeals to you, but even then you're just swapping mid prices and it's a pretty risky strategy.
We'll get on to some mid-price options in a little bit just to analyze the alternatives out there. But moving first to upgrade targets, a little bit more of an obvious route. So like you said, Mark, if you had more than 250K, you'd trade and probably agree with that. I'm sitting right on that cusp of 250, so I'm definitely considering upgrading this week and getting points on field. If you were to upgrade to a midfielder, let's discuss some of the midfield options that we looked at last week. Parker and Gray had another good game each. Parker scored like 130 and Gray scored 123. I think Sam Mitchell, our fears with him were a bit warranted because he scored a 97. Certainly,
still got heaps of the ball, but yeah. Just seems unlikely to average 120 plus again. Mm-hmm.
But certainly the drums on Parker are beating fairly loud and there are quite a few calls on social media first to, you know, correct our thoughts with one more week of information and maybe, you know, assess him as a top eight mid. Would you go that far, Mark, or would you still be sitting in the same camp as you were last week?
I think we probably did underestimate him a little bit last week, but I think maybe people are overestimating him a little bit this week. I don't expect him to go on an average 130 for the year. I just don't think that is realistically possible in that Sydney midfield. I know that feels like I'm just raising the same point, but they do bat very deep, and they've got a lot of talent in that midfield, and they can't all average 120 plus. I think that it is possible that the top end, Park could average 120 if everything goes exactly right for him and he has no injuries, Swans finish top two, and he gets a lot of midfield time. He has the potential to do that. He's looked awesome. If you picked him up last week for 530, I think that is an awesome pick. You've done really well. I probably wouldn't be moving heaven and earth to bring him in this week, but obviously he's probably still a really good pick if he stays fit. I think out of the bunch at about that price, he's a really good pick, but I wouldn't be trading like Pendlebury to him or anything silly like that.
The reason that I have Parker rated a little bit lower is that I rate Hanbury really, really highly. And Hanbury's not really done anything to make me think that he's going to drop off or that Parker's rise will be at the expense of Hanbury. I still expect Hanbury to be their dominant midfielder. I know Parker is a really, really strong player, but you could argue that some of his upside lies in the fact that he plays in the forward line. So when he scores big, he can score really big. But when he scores poorly, he'd arguably score a bit poorer than Hanbury has. And we haven't seen that downside yet this season for Parker, whereas I'm more confident that Hanbury's downside will be less frequent and a bit higher in terms of scoring. So that's the only reason for my reservations about Parker. I really like Hanbury. If I were to pick a Sydney midfield, I think it'd still be Hanbury despite Parker's blistering start. Having said that, if I could go back into a time machine last week, 530 compared to Hanbury priced at 610 this week, Parker was obviously very, very tempting at that price with hindsight. But now that Parker's at 578,000, I would pick Hanbury ahead of Parker. Could just be, you know, personal choice there.
I think he's pretty unlikely to be a top five midfielder this year. I think that if he does make the top eight, it'll be around that seven or eight mark. But that's my personal opinion.
And, you know, happy to put our hand up and say, like, we're not going to get every call right. We make a lot of calls every week. So sometimes we'll get things wrong, and we tend to play the odds a little bit because of our experience, Mark. And that means that sometimes we overlook some of the riskier decisions, or some of the decisions that are less likely to hit, because playing the odds, we tend to go with the greater likelihood. And because we've seen so much exposed form of fighting for points at Sydney, that's the only reason we'd be leaning that way.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We've seen a number of seasons of four gun mids battling it out for points.
Doesn't mean we will be right again, though. Okay, so the last midfielder that I want to talk about in terms of expensive mid options is Joel Selwood. He's priced at 558,000, 105, 70, and 142. This is off no preseason. Round three, scoring 142 and having a career high 14 clearances, albeit against the Brisbane Lions, who are without Rich, Rockliffe and Beams. But, you know, still, signs point toward good things. Would you be tempted to get on the ship now, or would you still hold off, Mark?
It's a good question. I think that you really can't read too much into that score against Brisbane. Like you said, that they were really depleted midfield. A gun player like Selwood, even if he's not fit, he's going to dominate in that game. So I think that my concerns from the preseason are probably still around. The fact that he scored 70-odd in round two sort of indicates that I was probably pretty close to right with that. He's an absolute gun. I think the fact that he's playing second midfielder at Geelong means that his potential for scoring is huge. He probably is one of those players that's such a massive talent that he could thrive without a preseason, but he can go on real lulls and really, really big runs. I've found his scoring runs to be pretty hard to predict personally.
Looking at swinging Crouch forward perhaps into a keeper, let's say if you had less budget to go after, you know, premium midfielders, because they do cost quite a bit of money, and sitting even at 247k as I do, Mark, I'm struggling to really hit the top end talent that I want. Parker's out of reach, even Selwood's just out of reach for mine. Swinging into the forward line though, you'd probably be able to get a keeper for 250k plus Crouch. We have questions about Zach Merritt again. He backed up the scores from the first two rounds with a 99. It was looking a little bit shaky, and we got a bit of a ribbing on Twitter before he turned it around. But he's averaging 115 at the moment. Would you still be considering him?
I haven't really, really seriously considered him for my own team, probably because I don't want to ruin going to the football and watching the Bombers. But I think that if he had 105 this year, that would be very close to top end for him, I would say. I think that it's more likely that he'll average closer to 95 to 100, and I would not wish this at all, but he has shown that he does have some propensity to get injured at some point during the year, so that would be a bit of a concern as well. But look, he does look like he's in absolute great form and will score as long as the Bombers remain a bit competitive and shouldn't get any attention. So I think what I said last week still stands. You're paying close to full price for him, I would say. The reason why I brought in Dustin Martin last week was similar to bringing in Zach Merritt. You can't quite afford the gun midfielder, so maybe you're better off bringing in someone that you know is going to be top six on their line. Zach should be pretty close to that.
Unfortunately for me, Dusty Martin's out of reach by like $1,000 or something painful like that.
Yeah, I was going to get Robbie Gray last week and he was $1,500 out of reach.
If you were in my shoes and $1,000 short, which forward would you be looking at if Zach Merritt is a feel-good for you but probably not one that you'd put your money on the line for?
And you've already got Aaron Hall.
Yep.
I'm really not sure, mate, that none of them like really scream out as like, yeah, you definitely need to pick me. Is there any mids in that cheaper range?
I mean, if I can't pick Selwood up, I'm really struggling here. So, you know, you're looking at Sloan, Cochin, Gaff, Jack. These are really risky premium mids.
Which Selwood is as well.
Selwood is, but he's at least shown multiple seasons of being 115 plus. And even if you don't think he's going to get straight back to that, you're sort of hoping that he will eventually, especially with Dangerfield's inclusion. I agree that overall he's still risky, but the rest compared to Selwood seem a heck of a lot riskier, and if Selwood's already risky.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. All right, so I guess two players that I would potentially consider would be Cyril Rioli. He showed that he can average pretty close to 100 last year, and I think he played 21 last year. And you'd expect the Hawks to do well. They've got players coming back from injury. I would expect him to average around 100, and so I think he's actually a pretty good pick. He can be a bit up and down, though. And the other one is, now this is really risky, is Tom Lynch from the Gold Coast. He's averaging 113 so far after three games, and he's not likely to keep that up, but he looks awesome. And if the Gold Coast do make the top eight this year and do have a good year and he does stay on the park, I think he could average 95 plus.
That one's a bit scary for me, man. I'm going to stay away from the key forwards. And if I do, I'm still tempted by Buddy a little bit more than Lynchy. Moving past some of these top-end blokes, Mark, if you're looking to someone to side-swap to, so Speculator or at Teddy McKay's asking, who should I get for Crouch? Only 60K in bank. Would there be anyone that you consider side-swapping to? I know before you're saying that you'd probably look at actually downgrading. But does, you know, maybe somebody like Aaron Young take your interest? So he's priced at 253,000. He's played really well as a mid-forward and has been kicking some good goals. Would you consider him potentially?
No, I definitely wouldn't. Just because I know that his scores have been in the past because he's been the sub so much. But I think he's kicked like 3 and 4 goals the last 2 weeks. And I don't think that he's the sort of player to be able to keep that up. So if he is relying on goals to get his points, there's going to be games where he's not kicking 3 or 4, especially like Wingard would hopefully be back this week, maybe next week at the latest. So there's going to be another target. I definitely would not consider Aaron Young. From that perspective, there's probably a whole bunch of players around that price you could speculate on, but you did speculate on Brad Crouch and it didn't work. So I think that there's enough rookies out there that I'd be downgrading to a rookie.
All right, last mid-price option that I want to talk about. Zaharakis. Talked about him last week, averaging 122. He went up 50K, but he's still at 470. If you thought that he could keep up a 110 average, he'd still be very tempting.
For sure, yep. And I think he could definitely do a 105 to 110 average.
Not committing to a yes or no?
I think that he's probably not likely to top 8 mids, but he probably presents just enough value for one more week that you could pick him and hopefully he gets the top end of his potential projections and works out.
Yeah, so that question was from MC Pappas. So I think that's a reasonable enough risk to take with Zaka, but I personally won't be doing it. If I take these mid-price risks, it tends to be with my starting team, and that has not worked out so far with Crouch, and I'm not going to side-swap again to another mid-pricer. So.
Okay, so Buddy versus Zaka, they're kind of very similarly priced.
Yeah, I much prefer Buddy, who, you know, even if he doesn't make the top 6 forwards, wouldn't be very far off, whereas Zaka could be fairly far off if he doesn't make it. Last question on Crouch. Would you perhaps double trade? So get rid of Crouch and get rid of either Rich or a Lonergan or a Seedsman type. So we got questions from Ross Martin and Matthew Grimston about those. Would you consider a downgrade in the back line to a Hartley or Ruggles and an upgrade in the midfield to get rid of Crouch? Or is that too much trading in 2 weeks?
4 trades in 2 weeks, geez, that's a lot to go down, especially if you're trading fit players out of your side or players that are going to be playing. I can understand why you might do it, though, because I think that, so say you do Crouch by DPP to Ruggles or Hartley or someone like that, you all of a sudden you've got 180,000, 200,000 just sitting there, and then you have the problems that you're talking about on this podcast at the start where you're saying, but I've got 200,000 cash there, so I'm not getting the points from that, so that's why my team is stalling a little bit. Like, and you can't just carry that cash forever. So if you are downgrading, I don't think it's a terrible idea to do an upgrade as well if you think that you have another mid-pricer that really isn't going to work out or is borderline on working out.
As tempting as it is to do 4 trades in 2 weeks, I think you just got to practice discipline here. Like, yes, your mid-prices haven't worked out. But the good thing about mid-prices is that while they can potentially fail, they should still score decent while they're in your team. Decent enough to hold on to and hopefully not wince too much. On the hope that, you know, eventually all it takes is a couple of good games to see a massive price spike and still profit from them. Or wait for, you know, somebody who goes down with a concussion, scores a 5, and then their price absolutely plummets. So I think now that you're with the mid-pricer, you sort of priced into taking the best mid-price route, which would be waiting for an opportunistic trade. I wouldn't want to be correcting, especially into plays that everybody else has, because then you're basically just 2 trades behind the pack. Whereas if you don't trade and your players work out, all of a sudden your PODs have come good. So I would just practice a little bit of discipline there and hope that something good turns up in a few weeks.
No, I disagree with that. I think if you've got players that are kind of not working out, I guess like me with De Goey last week, I would have been reasonably happy to correct that to a Guns N' Roses approach and just go on premium.
But you kept the goey.
I did in the end.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the point. It's like at 300,000, you're better off waiting for, you know, Dugowie scored 89. All of a sudden, you know, you have a sunny disposition. Like Brad Crouch, yeah. Lonergan, Seedsman, they're not going to go down in price. So, I mean, they could hurt you in terms of scoring in the meantime, but you've already taken the punt on them. And just because they're not consistently scoring well doesn't mean they don't have that upside to score well. They certainly do. That's why they're in your team. It just sucks that they aren't able to do it consistently. But wait till they are able to do it for a small patch and then get rid of them still at a profit instead of just being a couple trades behind and trading into the pack.
Yeah, but no, look, I understand what you're saying, and I guess I just have a different perspective. If I felt like Seedsman was actually not a good pick and I made a mistake with that, this is a good time to sort of fix that mistake, even though you go a trade down.
Yeah, I do agree with that. If you think you've made a mistake on the play and he's an absolute dud, then I'd probably say I agree with it. Maybe Seedsman is, but it's hard to say because we've never really been in that camp. But, you know, definitely Lonergan and Crouch. I'd be tempted to keep both of them.
Yeah.
All right, next question is from Josh Hughes. This is just basically a checkpoint, Mark. What do we do with Rich 1 week on? Should be coming back into the team this week, so I'm assuming that's the keep.
He's listed as a test again. Apparently, Rocky's listed as a test. So traditional information on Rocky's injuries and his recovery rate is not reliable at all. if Rich doesn't play this week, that'd be really, really frustrating. And so I guess that can provoke almost an emotional response to trade, but realistically, you're like another 1 week injury. I should really just keep someone that will hopefully be a keeper in defense. So look, I'll be keeping him. I can understand why you would double correct Rich and Crouch. I can totally understand why you'd do that. That doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. If I was in that boat, I would be actually tempted by it. The fact that I'm not means I'm not going to be trading Rich out of my team, but I have considered it. 38, he's picked up an injury. It kind of hasn't worked out so far. That doesn't mean it won't come good, but it really hasn't worked out so far. I'm guessing you're a definite no trade.
I think if I was tempted by the double trade, the Rich Crouch trade, it would be because I'd like a Ruggles in my team, perhaps, or Hartley, if you liked either two of those rookies. But, I mean, even that seems sketchy because I'm already playing three rookies on field in the back line that extend it to four, and then you're starting to cap your scoring potential. So, yeah, I'd be wary. I wouldn't be trading Rich out at this point. Without that double trade situation, I definitely wouldn't just be trading out Rich and leaving 300k just sitting around. You might as well just take the punt that Rich works out. Next question is from Michael Eskander. Trade or keep Green, Mark? So there's another follow-up question. He scored 50 last week, and just last week you were pondering maybe he's decent after this 120 score, and he dishes up another score in the 50, so you must be happy you don't have him.
I even last week was thinking, geez, like Green looked really good on the weekend. Do I even think of bringing him in? Like maybe he is capable of doing this every week. And then like it's weird that 1 week in the middle he played awesome. And then rounds 1 and 3 he's been really fumbly. I have no idea what's going on there, mate. I cannot get a read. I think, again, you probably have to stick out with Toby Green and hopefully has like 3 or 4 good games in a row, but then you've picked him as a keeper. Like, it's a very, very tricky situation. What's your plans, Matt?
I'm just sitting on a keep at the moment. If I was going to trade him out, it would have been last week despite his 120, because it doesn't really change much. Like, knew he was capable of scoring 50s because he bloody scored 50 in round 1 and he did it again in round 3, so it makes me frustrated, but hopefully this is just a pattern of up and down and he averages more up for the rest of the season. The good thing about Green is that he's still getting to contest. He's still playing enough midfield minutes to score well. It's just that he's, like you said, Mark, fumbly. His disposal's been off. He gets possession under pressure, which really affects his disposal efficiency, and that means that even when he gets 20 touches, he can struggle to score big points. At least he gets plenty of tackles and stuff as well, so I think he's just got to keep the faith.
And he did score well in a win, so if you can sort of see the Giants potentially making the 8, maybe he might have more of those good games.
Yeah. Again, if I were looking to trade Green, I don't really think that he's going to be under 430k for much of the season, so I'd be happy to wait until like a key position forward had an absolute stinker and went down to like 350k, and then I could make 100k off a side swap, something like that. So yeah. I would hold Green until a more opportunistic trade came up and just give him the opportunity to turn things around. Sure. Next question is about Sam Gray. So for those people who started him, he's at least had two games above 50. 99, 57, 78. But averaging pretty similar to
That's
to
pretty
Gray.
Poor though, isn't it?
It is.
Like, that's not what you would want from someone that over 400,000 for. And someone who came home, I think, what, averaging 110 in the last six or so games at the end of last year and did really well over the NAB. So people were picking him, were sort of expecting Hall numbers, and he hasn't sort of got anywhere near that. He did have a lot of possessions in round one. Against the Bombers, he should have really scored well on the weekend, and he did get a decent amount of the ball, but I would be worried about his Dream Team to Supercoach conversion. He does seem to have a very negative ratio there, and so potentially he's just a high possession player that's more suited to Dream Team than he is to Supercoach, and he could be a player that averages 85-90, which would be, I think, pretty disappointing from your starting pick and puts you in a bit of an awkward position, really, doesn't it?
I mean, neither of us were too hot on Gray in the preseason. We addressed him in the forward show and both of us passed, so I would be tempted to sideswap him. He's at 460K as well, so he's cost more than Green at the moment. Yeah, but you know, having said that, you'd still think that he should be able to average, like you were saying, 85-90 sort of numbers. So maybe wait for an opportunistic trade on him as well.
Yeah, a bit like Green, like a luxury trade at the end of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, even Barlow and Rich go down this trajectory if they're just not quite hitting premium numbers. They're not really the players that you trade out now. They're players that you kind of have to keep as premiums and maybe upgrade later. Yeah. How does that work for you, considering you were sort of saying last week that if you're going to be trading, now's the time to do it because you get all those extra points because you get 20 rounds worth of points rather than just sort of happening towards the end of the year. How do you feel about that in this situation?
So I think it's sort of like higher risk, higher reward. The earlier you make a decision, the more time you have for the trade to work out in a positive sense. But at the same time, the less information you have to go off as well. And then the start of the season, because there's not been very many price movements, you also get less opportunities in terms of trade-in targets. Most players at the moment are quite fairly priced, especially after one price movement. Whereas as the season moves on, there's potentially more opportunities to pick up better value sideways trades. So I definitely think, you know, if you're swapping two mid prices for a premium and a rookie, the earlier you do it, the better. But if you're making one sideways trade from a Barlow to a Hall type, even though you have more potential for it to work out at the start of the season, you offset that risk, hopefully, with a little bit of value when you make that trade in mid-season.
Okay.
Still not ideal situations, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Pendlebury in the midfield. It's like, geez, he hasn't looked right the first few weeks, but he has the potential to still average 120. He's been scoring well when he hasn't looked great, so it's just got to kind of stick with it.
Yeah, so that actually takes us to the next question, Mark, from David Siddles. Pendles doesn't look like he's quite fit. Is it time to break the sideways trading rule? So that's probably a no from the both of us. If we're saying no to these mid prices, and as you just alluded to with Pendles, means that we definitely got to hold on for longer with these already established premiums.
Just, it's interesting though, because David Siddles does say, what if I could trade him for Danger?
God.
Because Danger's looked sick.
Yes, like, he has.
He's looked 130 potential this year,
mate,
which is what we've sort of always expected as his potential.
Thank you, though, for pushing the Dangerfield agenda on me, because he hadn't spent a lot of time in my team pre-season. I was very nervous on him having moved down to Geelong, but God, I'm so glad I'm on the train on Supercoach.
Well, they got a pretty easy draw, so hopefully that works out. I think Pendles will come good, though. The odds are that, based on his previous history, that he'll still average close to 120, and the difference between him and Danger won't be 20 points per game. But, I mean, geez, if it was 10 points a game, close to being worth the trade. But if it's 20, it's like, wow, that's an awesome win. So, look, I'm not saying that I'm suggesting people should go out and trade Pendles for Dangerfield, but it is an interesting one that I don't think is completely clear-cut, whereas I think Pendles to anyone else other than Ablope would be a no.
In the 4 years before last year, he scored 124-plus consecutively, and last year he scored 116. So I'd still suggest that that's his downside. So, yeah, I agree with your thoughts, Mark. let's move on to trade in targets now, and we'll move through some must-haves pretty quickly. If you've missed out on must-haves, and last week we talked about Adams and Kerridge and Ben Kennedy and Hall even, we've got a question here. MC Pappas is asking about Adams. Jimmy Riddle's asking about Wietering. MDGP asking about Aaron Hall. Thoughts on any of these blokes? Would you consider bringing in a must-have 1 week into a price rise, or is that just too late?
That's a really tricky question, because we have seen an examples of that where that worked, like Stephen Martin a couple of years ago when he was available as a ruck. You picked him up a week after his price rise and it worked out all right. But I think paying $226 for Adams, based on current scoring, that seems like a pretty good deal. Can he keep current scoring up? I mean, he's averaging 105. You think that that's impossible that he's going to get anywhere near that? Considering he would be on your field scoring points versus another rookie and you're still money out of it, I don't think it's a ridiculously bad trade personally, because he does seem to be an absolute must have. Wietering at 289, I don't know, he looked like a keeper on the weekend. It does seem a bit much. That seems extremely risky for a first year key position player.
290,000, that's insane.
Yeah, he looked awesome.
Yeah, he did.
How good he's looked in some of these games. Yeah. Like, I mean, even the first week against the Tigers, there was a couple of moments there where you're just like, okay, this guy is an absolute gun already. Risky part is that one of them becomes a keeper.
I don't think Wietering will become a keeper. Adams might be, just because he's one of those fringe keepers. I don't think he'll actually genuinely be in the top six defenders. If you did think that, then you'd absolutely would trade him in this week. It's difficult. I mean, Paul Seedsman's priced at 336,000 and Adams is at 220. So you're only making 100K, and sure, Adams is smashing Seedsman at the moment, but does Adams really have that much more growth potential than Seedsman moving forward? I don't know if it's enough to warrant a trade, but yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I think I'd probably still pull it. The realistic thing here is, though, that if you didn't bring Wietering in before last week, that's fine. Like, you didn't have enough information there. He looked really good, but I can understand structurally why you wouldn't.
Yeah.
But Adams, you've really got to learn next season that if someone is playing that well and they score 130 in their first 2 weeks and they're a mature age rookie and they're 120,000, you need to prioritize that as a trade in last week.
Yeah, and we did mention that in the show last week. Aaron Hall, though, not a rookie, but a mid-price or now premium, he's priced at 488,000. So that's up there for a forward. It's not up there considering he's averaging 129 at the moment. Would he be a must-have at that price?
Based on the fact that he could average 110, I think that that's really like hoping for the best. But I mean, if he did, 488 is an awesome price, and you're not going to see him anywhere near that price for the rest of the year. Like, if he did go on to average like 110. So look, I think that he's a pretty important player to have in your team. But then, like, how strict am I on that? Am I encouraging people to trade out another premium to Hall, like a Barlow to Hall? Would I encourage people to do that? That seems like we're just using a lot of trades early in the year if you start going down that route. I don't think it's terrible. Last week was the time to do it, though.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think you start getting into pretty tricky territory if you start making those, ooh, he's a must-have, and then next week someone else will be a must-have, like JJ was last week, and then someone else will be next week. You've got to put a stop on it at some point.
Yep, I agree with that. So looking to trade in targets in terms of rookies, there's Nick Comer in the forward line, but we've mentioned him previously. He scored 230s. His scoring potential isn't there as a small forward in Essendon's team, or medium forward. Then we've got Michael Hartley on the bubble, also from Essendon. Would have probably been in most teams ahead of D if he was named round one, so thankfully he wasn't. That worked out surprisingly okay. But now would he be in consideration? And then, of course, there's Ruggles, who arrived on the scene on the weekend and scored 77 in Jordan Murdoch's absence. Would you perhaps wait one more week for him instead of picking a Hartley? Yeah. And then there's Jaden Short as a mid-forward. He's scored 52 and 46 so far. So these would be people who are considering trading out, you know, an Oscar McDonald type or a John Simkin type or maybe even a Brad Crouch type.
So Hartley I was a big fan of in the preseason. I think some people ask me prior to round one, should they keep Hartley in anyway? I thought that might have been a mistake just because the tall setup at Essendon is really uncertain. I think, especially if Hooker/Hurley leave, we're going to need to get games into Hartley, and that's going to be very important. But we do have a lot of talls, still, even this year with like the extra like Grimer, a lot of them can flip between forward and back. Are we going to play McKernan because he's only fit for this week? So balancing those out is going to be tricky, and it's just interesting to see whether Hartley is one of the first that actually gets squeezed out in that process. I kind of have some concerns over his job security about whether he's going to play every week. Otherwise, I think he's a really good pick if you do have confidence that he'll play every week. So, yep, I think Hartley is probably good enough to take a risk on. The player that does stand out in that group is Ruggles for me, and he stood out preseason. I know I asked you on the preseason show, can he get best 22? Because like he does a really good pedigree as a potential Supercoach scorer coming off half back, won their VFL best and fairest last year, showed it against the Lions, unfortunately, so it's really hard to get a read on that. And you, I guess you do have, is it Wagner from the Demons who played his first game on the weekend, who's a defender as well? So I guess you've got insurance if you're waiting for a week that you might get be able to get one of those guys. From what I understand, Oscar McDonald is fit this week, so I probably wouldn't be trading him to Hartley this week. I'd be waiting. But Ruggles is definitely someone that interests me, as if I'm going to be picking a rookie, I really like getting someone that's mature age into my team, because they just seem far more likely to hold down a spot over a long, grueling season and score more consistently.
Yep, I agree with that. And his absolute basement price at $102,000. And he plays for Geelong, who have a pretty good draw to start the year. So, yeah, I'd agree with that. I think if you want a rookie, you could probably wait an extra week. And you have Ruggles, Wagner, Goodyear, Sierra Byrne from Carlton. So there's definitely a few options out there. So unless you really needed to make the downgrade this week, and I'm probably wouldn't see that as likely unless you also wanted to make an upgrade, I would hold off. But, you know, those people are looking to what do about, a down and up, Hartley would certainly be the standout option this week. And
so you would, like, if you're thinking you're not going to trade next week, but you need to do a down and up this week, who are you taking out of Ruggles and Hartley?
I'm a little bit worried about job security for Ruggles, because he did make the team when Murdoch's out with soreness. You know, we still have people nipping at his heels, like potentially Buse, who played quite a few games over the last couple of years. So his spot isn't absolutely secure. But having said that, you know, the problem that you outlined with the tools at Essendon is certainly worthwhile considering as well. Hartley doesn't have that spot locked down either. And Grimer's available apparently this week. So there's a chance even that he could be turfed out as soon as this week. So I think that because the risk profile is relatively similar, because of the reasons that you've outlined for Ruggles, I would probably take the risk on Ruggles. I don't know if that's correct, though.
But both of them are quite risky because of job security. But, I mean, I guess all rookies that we see from one are going to be pretty risky because of job security, just because, I mean, they weren't named in their round one teams.
Yep.
Like, they're borderline best 22.
Yep. Alrighty, Mark. So we ended up having a little bit to talk about in the end. So I hope the show was useful to all of you out there.
Geelong versus Bombers this week, mate.
Yeah, I know. I'm volunteering for an event. So unfortunately, I'm not going to make it down to the game with you, mate, which I'm very disappointed
about. I know. I've got tickets. I've got vacant seats next to me. And I can't even give them away to you, mate. This is going to be a weird thing to say, but I actually think the first half will go better than it did last year, even with 12 of our players suspended.
I think it was like,
I'm pretty sure it was like 81 zip at halftime or something crazy.
Geelong isn't playing the smoothest transition football at the moment. Our fans were getting quite upset at the amount of times we were kicking backward last week. So as long as your defense is up.
Kick it to Jimmy.
Yeah, kick it to Jimmy. That's right. All right. Anything to leave the community with ahead of round four?
No, I guess that a whole bunch of creative trades that I would love to make this week and some fancy corrections that might come off. But unfortunately, my advice is, unless you get an injury, you should probably hands for a few weeks.
Yep. Agree with that, mate. We're thinking it was going to be a short show because of that. So, even though we've talked about the options for quite a bit this week, still practice a bit of caution. And to be honest, Mark, that tends to be the difference between good Supercoach players and consistently good Supercoach players and, more inexperienced Supercoach players who tend to fall off over the season. Those of us that tend to do well over the course of the season, it's because of a bit of trade discipline, isn't it, mate?
That's right, but maybe we'd sell more newspapers if we were like, trade this guy and bring this guy in this week and you should make three trades. I've got a secret to do that. Like, we might actually might be more exciting and people might quite aged by that process, but unfortunately we've only got 30 trades.
Yeah, that's a good call out, mate. Anyway, that's it for us this week. All the best for your Supercoach team, to all of you out there, and to you too, Mark, but hopefully I can still get the Chockies over you, because 1-4 would be nice, wouldn't it?
I think I'll let you start your run at about round 14.
That seems to be leading it a bit late. So we'll see how we go. We'll catch you all next week. Bye.
Yes.